Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
The martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
And it's time for Movies and Booze. We're joined in the studio by Olivia Fahey, Linda Coogan, and Mrs. Brady O'Lady Fionnuala Jones. Happy birthday,
Fionnuala. Thank you so much.
Happy birthday. Thank you.
She thinks she's old. She's not. Are you doing it? Are you a birthday person?
Yeah, I was. I wanted to do a birthday that was a night of 1,000 Fionnualas where everyone came dressed as a different version of me. But I'm having 2 weddings, so like something I had to give, you know, that we had
okay,
to, Keena to sit down and go, okay, well, there's only so many calendar weekends in a year. And I said, you're actually dead right. So.
Okay, but if you hadn't been getting married, how many different versions of you are there?
I mean, would we get to 1,000? Probably not. I think we could get to 25, maybe. When I put it to my friends, they had lots of options, so.
Really?
Yeah.
But they had to be real ones, not like Fionnuala's in prison for killing someone.
No, they had to be real. So I used to do food testing in supermarkets. It was one of my first jobs.
Okay.
So one of the girls was going to come dressed as that. She used to do it for a bread brand, so she would come dressed
food
as that.
Food testing?
Food, you know, you give out samples.
All right, okay. I thought it was like, is this poison? Give it to Fionnuala. God, it's amazing you are 30.
Yeah, true. I like Halloween costumes, so people could come in Halloween costumes. I had a very short haircut in my teens.
Iconic.
So they'd probably do that. Yeah, I modelled off Frankie Sandford from the Saturdays. Could have done that. There were options, like, I think.
Okay, it would involve research.
It would, yeah. Yeah, but that's the level of dedication I require from my birthday party attendee.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah, I completely respect that. So what wines are we talking about today, Linda?
And I also agree, I said to you, Olivia, that you're such a chameleon. Like, every time you see you, you look somewhat different and cool.
There you
okay,
go.
Okay, and speaking of chameleons...
I thought she's a comedian.
Well, you are that, well.
She tries, girls, she tries.
Speaking of something that can also be other things, Pinot. Mm-hmm. Pinot Blanc and Pinot Noir, not Pinot Grigio today. So two different Pinots, one from France, Alsace, and one from New Zealand, Marlborough. White and a red, and I love both of them, and they are absolutely delicious. So we're going to get to taste both of them.
Okay.
Cheers.
And so did Freakier Friday.
Today is Friday.
Yeah, it's Friday.
little freaky.
But is it the kind of, you know, follow up everyone's been waiting for?
Do you know what? I didn't realize just how popular the first one was until I turned around to people and said I wasn't a massive fan of the first one, and the absolute like shock horror that was on everyone's faces around me. So I was like, oh, okay, maybe this is a thing that I just missed the boat on and just wasn't into. But yeah, it's grand. We'll get into it. Like, there are definitely some positives in it. Some negatives, but for fans of the first one, I think they're going to really like it.
Okay, yeah. But if you're indifferent to the first one, or if you've never seen the first one, might you watch this and go, oh, I'll go back to the first one. This might be good.
Some people might, yeah. And actually, I think one thing that they did very well is that enough of the first one is explained without, if you haven't seen the first one, there's enough kind of explained that you don't need to have seen the first one before seeing the second one.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's actually kind of good because it has been many years since I've seen the first one. I didn't really remember certain plot points until they were kind of like doing it. I went, oh yeah, I do remember that. So yeah, it was.
When
was
the first one?
2004, 2006.
I was going to say.
Were you even alive when the first one came out?
I was alive. I didn't really love it either.
Yeah.
2003.
I wasn't that far off.
Like it's definitely like, it was a film of the time as well. Like it was very much like that early noughties kind of vibe. They luckily don't really try and do that in this one. It is quite like modern. It feels kind of like fresh, but knowing that it's also not fresh and new, it's still a very much like, can we call it a legacy sequel? Probably.
No. Yeah, I think they've.
It's more than 20 years old, so yeah, I suppose I think that does count, doesn't it?
Oh crikey! Yeah, it does. Right, so they're going to start filming the Batman 2.
Yeah, the Batman Part 2 is finally going to be filmed this year. They're aiming for October next year to be released. Sorry, not October next year, October 1st, 2027. Because the whole thing was that I've talked about this on the show previously that Matthew Reeves, who did the first one. There was no sign of a script, like no sign of a script. And we're talking the first film came out in 2022. I mean, 5 years, it's not a massive gap for sequels, not totally unusual, but I think they're what, you know, it made boatloads of money. It was setting up again this new kind of DC universe. Like, where was the second film? Matthew Reeves was doing nothing. I'm kind of wondering, were they waiting to see how Superman did a small bit and maybe kind of hedging their bets on that. And obviously Superman has been, by and large, a global box office hit, I would say. So they're back filming this year. Robert Pattinson is coming back as Batman, but I think there was also worry that that the project would move on so much that he'd go on to do other things, because he's doing The Odyssey with Christopher Nolan that I've talked about a lot. And he's also in Dune 3, which I did not realise. I don't know who he's playing in that. So that's coming out. And then in terms of what else DC is working on, we've got Supergirl, which is coming next. So this is next year, Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. Clayface also coming in 2026, and the next Wonder Woman. But I think that's still kind of slightly up in the air in terms of production. So
in the Superman film, right at the start, it's like he's been, you know, beaten up by three other
villains,
super beings.
Yeah.
What happens to them? You never see them again.
Oh, no, it's the... So when he goes back to Metropolis, it's the same creature, the Baravia, the Hammer of Baravia, was that what he's called?
Yeah.
So basically he's already tried fighting him, lost, went, healed, and then went back to the city and was beaten up by him again.
Okay.
Sorry, I
completely missed that. I really did.
Did you like Superman?
I thought it was like he's beaten up by these three dudes. You never see them again, and it's all Lex Luthor.
No. It was the Hammer of Baravia, whatever he was called.
Yeah. See.
Yeah.
Blink
they need,
didn't
they
miss
need
it.
More memorable names or easier to remember names.
Easier to remember names. Yeah. Well, I suppose it was like spoiler alert. It turned out to be a made up person anyway. So
yeah.
Right. Okay.
Every story today is they're remaking something. There's a TV show of something that already exists.
That's most Fridays, except this one could be a criminal offence.
No, this
the holiday was an appalling pile of doo doo. The
wrong,
first time,
wrong.
What? Yes,
incorrect.
Was.
100%.
Awful.
Incorrect. No,
who are we surrounded by today?
I know. Sorry, and I know. I don't like talking about Christmas in August, but I won't stand for the holiday slander. But it is being made into a TV series. Well, sorry, it's developed. It's not 100% green yet, but Apple TV Plus is working on it. Nancy Myers, though, not involved. So this was obviously announced, and then Nancy Myers had to come out on Twitter or whatever social media, or it was Instagram. She said, "News to me. Imagine my surprise when I opened Instagram and this is the first post I saw." So I don't know what that means for.
But does
the rest
she
of the
own it? Do they have to ask her?
Maybe not. Is the thing? It's not. This is where my issue lies with it as well, right? Although I still think there would be an issue if this was like a follow-on from the film The Holiday, starring Cameron Diaz and Kate Winslet. The issue is that it's going to follow new characters. But so we're basically just watching people swap houses, which I could do on any numerous reality TV shows with funnier, more
it probably is one called House Swap.
Literally. The whole, like, I know, okay, you don't agree on The Holiday, whatever. I'm not here to argue with you. But the whole charm of the original The Holiday is that they were, you know, two different girlies from across the tracks, and they swap lives and swap loves in the process. And she's in the quaint little English cottage, and Kate Winslet's yucking it up with Jack Black in LA or wherever that house is supposed to be.
Yeah.
That, like, I don't care about two new characters I've never met. And so they've swapped houses. I don't care.
But how is this a series? I mean,
but how are you driving?
It's going to be longer than actual Christmas.
I don't know. Because it makes sense as a film, because it's like, they go for their set amount of time and then they come back and their lives are changed forever. But they always remember The Holiday. Screen cuts to black. What am I watching this over? Now, it's a limited series, so I don't think they're planning to extend this any longer, but this is making me really angry.
Rob Delaney has something to do with that.
Yeah, Rob Delaney is a consultant, which kind of does that fill me with joy, maybe, because I think that would make me believe that it might be funny.
Yeah.
But you'd need a really good cast and a really good story, and I don't think we're going to get it here. The nostalgia porn at some point has to stop.
It has to stop.
We have to just start trying to make new things.
Oh, no.
Please,
so, that's
guys.
So hard. Right, Linda, what wine are we going to talk about first?
Okay, so this is a French wine from Alsace, the most northern part of France. Nice, cool region with mainly white grapes grown. So this is a Pinot Blanc. It is called Gustave Lorenz Lamé de Crustin. Okay, I will spell all that later if you want. But basically, Gustave is the this wine goes back seven generations to the 17th century.
Okay.
So they've been making wine a long, long time. German influence, so it's a flute-shaped bottle, screw cap, just real clean, crisp, really, really fresh, really food-friendly. And obviously, there are shellfish, fish, oysters, and all sorts of crabs all over the bottle. So it kind of hints to what it might pair well with. Yeah. But it's, for me, Pinot Blanc is just one of those grapes that's kind of forgotten about. People know Pinot Grigio, but they don't really know Pinot Blanc. And it is grown in Germany as well. And it's just something to look out for. Really easy, versatile, clean, crisp, no oak, real stainless steel, fresh. And again, gorgeous aperitif, your seafood, oysters, anything like that. Yum.
Yeah, and quite different to Pinot Grigio, which I always think tastes of water.
Proper, good quality Pinot Grigio can taste like a lot of stuff, but most of them are kind of watery in a glass.
Or turn on your tap.
No. With a bit of alcohol in it. Yeah. I know. Look, there are some really good Pinot Grigios, but there is more not so good ones. And this Pinot Blanc has more of a pear note, a floral note, and a bit of a minerality as well. So it kind of has that sea coastal influence. And I just think I love Pinot Blanc.
No, it's very nice.
So this is available in, so the grape you can pick up in supermarkets as well. Just look for Pinot Blanc on the label. But this particular one, Gustave Lorenz, is available in Wine & Line, McHugh's, Pinto's, Malloy's, Higgins and other independents.
Okay, excellent stuff. Okay, what movie would you like to talk about first?
Oh, let's go for Freakier Friday.
Okay, we'll go for... We didn't even mention the second movie we're going to be talking about today, which is the documentary about fans of Eminem.
Yes,
Eminem,
called Stans.
Really hard to say that.
Yes, it's a new documentary. It just got like a global release. And, you know, I actually hadn't even heard that there was a documentary in the making until I got the email to be like, would you like to review this? And I went, yes. And I was actually very surprised by it. It's done in a really interesting way because it's not just focusing on him. It's also focusing on the fans' perspective on him and how basically he kind of rejuvenated and changed the way that fans interact with their celebrity idols in a way. Because
of the song.
Because of the song. Yeah. It had a massive cultural impact that I don't think people realize just how much he changed. And as a result of that song, like how much... what we say today, like as I stan that couple, it actually stems from Stan the song. So like that, those are things that I didn't even realize until it was literally spelled out for me in this documentary.
Okay,
so
that's fascinating.
It's really cool.
Okay, so we're going to take a break and we're not going to talk about that. Freakier Friday coming up next.
Certainly never had two parents come in here and be this attractive. I meant attentive.
Lily and I are definitely going to reflect on how to do better.
This is all Harper and I are going to think about.
We're very, very committed, especially as a single parent household.
Oh, us too. Oh. We're single parent.
Great.
I mean, I'm a single parent.
Yeah. Great. Yes.
You know what I mean.
Same. Me too.
Single.
Single parent. Guilty.
I'm single too. Oh my God. Should we meet up?
Perhaps our daughters should get to know each other.
Maybe like Wednesdays after six, get a little wine, talk about these badass kids.
There you go. That's a Freakier Friday. All the same people in it?
Some, yeah. So, of course, you've got Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan are returning to their roles of Tess and Anna. You also have Mark Harmon returning as Tess's husband and Anna's stepfather. Also, Chad Michael Murray is back as well. So he returns as Anna's former love interest. So they are not still together. He is also not the father of Anna's child, Harper. But what we just heard there in that clip, that is when Anna meets Eric, her new love interest, who's played by Manny Jacinto. So fans would know him from The Good Place. He played Jason in The Good Place and he was also in The Acolyte. And, you know, if you did like The Acolyte or even watch it, you'll be happy to hear that, yes, his arms are back and spectacular looking again. But so this time, instead of it being just Tess and Anna that swap bodies, it's actually Tess and Anna, Lily, who's Eric's daughter, and Harper, who's Anna's daughter. It's kind of like a four-way swap. So Harper becomes Anna and Tess and Lily swap places. And I have to say, I was a bit skeptical, wondering like how were they going to do this like four-way swap kind of thing. But it actually works really well. Each actor kind of maintains some little quirky quality that the character that they're actually playing has, but then also trying to pretend to be the other person that they're in the body of as well. So it was actually quite a fun, interesting look at, you know, the acting method and how good they are at their craft. And the chemistry between them all was actually really good also. But for me, there were some like comedic moments that were just so overly cringe that I was just basically trying to climb under the seat in the cinema to get away from, because I'm not a fan of cringy comedy. It's just it just makes me wriggle in my seat. Yeah. To the point I actually was it left like as well.
Was it deliberately cringy? As in the comedy of embarrassment kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So I think it was like what they were going for, but I was just like, no, I can't. One scene actually had me get up and leave just for 5 seconds to be like, I just can't keep watching this little bit. It was just, and it kept going for ages as well. I was like, no, I can't. So yeah, but like there were also some other moments where, because of course with Freaky Friday and Freakier Friday, of course there's going to be a lot of kind of like emotional issues that they all need to kind of overcome, and a lot of that kind of those heavy, really like touching moments were done really nicely, I thought, and it doesn't seem as forced as it definitely could have. So I think they did better at those than they did the comedy moments to me.
Yeah. Given that 20 years has elapsed and that, or in the films has 20 years elapsed.
Yeah, a long time has elapsed as well. So like with everyone's like kind of aged up, and Anna has now, like she was a teen rock star. She is now working for a music production company, and she's kind of mentoring this new artist as well, who was a fan of her music beforehand. So there's that nice kind of like little connection there as well. And like one thing that Harper is trying to do is she kind of realizes that her mum was actually kind of cool, and just all of the sacrifices that her mum made when she had her, kind of thing. Because of course she was a single mom. But then there's also the dynamic between Tess and Anna, where Tess was there for Anna when she had Harper, and she was kind of like her support, her other parent kind of thing. But she keeps overstepping and like contradicts Anna when, you know, Anna says, I know, like I can take Harper to school. And she's like, oh, well, like I'm here now, I'll just take her. And you're like, well, no, I've planned to take my child to school. Like, it's fine. I can do this for my child. And she's just like, no, it's fine. I've got it. And I baked cookies, like that kind of a thing. So yeah, there's like definitely some like interesting dynamics to see how their lives have progressed over the last, say, 20 years.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, there were some little moments, because like I grew up in a house with a single mother and my grandmother, and seeing some of those moments, I was like, oh yeah, those things have definitely happened in my household as well. So there was a couple of like nice relatable moments as well, which I thought was cute.
Okay, you said that sounds like you enjoyed it more than you thought you did.
I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to. And for me, I'm kind of like, it was grand. It wasn't something that I think was spectacular, that I'm like, everybody, like, just drop what you're doing and go see it. It was, for fans of the film, I think you're going to like it. Even if you're not a fan of the film, I think you'll be able to sit through it with someone who, like, was a fan of the first one. And you'll find bits of it that you're going to enjoy as well. So it's definitely, I think, something that everyone can watch as opposed to should watch, if that makes
sense. Okay. Is it, because it's this four-way body swapping thing, does it get confusing at any point?
At one point it did, mainly because there's like some accent things going on. So Lily actually speaks with a British accent, but Jamie Lee Curtis keeps her American accent. Now, I don't know why they took that choice, because I would have imagined she probably would have kept the British accent for even when she's in the American body, but maybe not. Someone, I'm sure, has more thought about that more than me. But like, she comes out with some like Britishisms in an American accent, and you're kind of like, why are you saying it like that? Oh yeah, it's because your other character's British, right? Okay. So that for me, like, sometimes she'd be like Jamie Lee Curtis in her American accent going, bugger, and you're like, no, what?
Yeah. Well, maybe she just couldn't do a good enough English accent.
That's kind of what I was wondering. Was that the reason why they wrote that into it? So, or maybe the other girl couldn't do an American accent. So,
oh God,
you don't know.
It's pretty limiting though if you're an actor and you can't do an American accent. That's going to limit you in terms of roles you're going to get in the future.
Yeah, just a little bit. Just a little bit.
Okay. All right. So yeah, it was all right.
It was all right. Yeah. Like, and I think one thing that Fionnuala and I were even saying is that we were surprised that it's getting a cinematic release as opposed to a Disney streaming release.
Oh, right.
So I'm not sure whether it was originally streaming and then was changed to cinema, or whether it was always going to be a cinematic release. But yeah, I was surprised that it is actually getting the big screen treatment.
For the Oscars.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. You're all laughing cynically. Right. I'm surprised they're even making a movie about this, Fionnuala, because it's going to be so fraught.
Are we talking about Luigi Mangione?
Yeah,
Nothing's confirmed yet, but basically Luigi Mangione, the alleged gunman who killed United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson last year, when his mugshot, and it was revealed what he looked like, I think I actually talked about it on the show previously as well, everyone was like, he's the head off Dave Franco. Yeah. If there's ever a biopic, it has to be Dave Franco. And if you do look at pictures of them, they're like, they're very, very similar looking. It's crazy. He's spoken out about this now because he's promoting his new film Together with Alison Brie, which I'd imagine we'll be reviewing on the show over the coming weeks. I'm very excited about it. And he was asked outright, would he ever do it? And he said he would do it, but there's nothing officially in the works or in talks yet, because it's like, this is an ongoing situation. I'd imagine they'll leave it a while and then make something of it. But then I'm like, will he have aged out by then? I'm not really sure. But then, as you said, it's also, it just begs, like, it's so, like, it's a landmine of a film to even make. But it is fascinating in another sense. Like, I'm really not into true crime. I think overall, as a genre, it's a bit exploitive. But it is, like, the fan base that he's, and that's probably not even the right word, or maybe it is in another sense.
No, but he has.
The genuine fascination
And there is a context to the killing that isn't justified, of course, but it says something about the state of America.
Yeah, there's how do you talk about that? How do you talk about the fact that also someone died? How do you talk about the fact that people are like really weirdly, bizarrely horny for him online in ways that we've that I cannot even mention on the airwaves, you know? Like, it's just, but anyway, he said he's up for it. Whether it'll ever happen, who knows?
Yeah, well, you use the word horny. I think that probably paints a picture in people's minds as to how they felt about him. But I would imagine even the funny thing is that you could see how, in the hands of the right director, it could say a lot about the state of America, about, because it was, you know, he was a healthcare boss, and you know, vast swathes of Americans don't have healthcare, and et cetera, et cetera. But also in the way the United States is, it'd be very hard to get that made, I would think.
And in the hands of a lesser director, you got something that's so far one way, so far the other way.
Yeah,
it's risky business.
Yeah. Okay, so there has been a glimpse of this new Office spin-off.
Yes.
The Paper.
The Paper, starring our own Donald Gleeson. We got a trailer this week. Looks like, look, I know I was giving out about things being remade again, and now I'm literally here eating my own hat. We have to support our own, first of all. Like, I'm just like, I'll give this a fair shot. You know what I mean? We're however many years out from when it finished. When was it? 2013, I want to say. Can't remember. Anyway, I was wondering, I was like, okay, they're doing this. How is it connected to The Office, or is it like standalone?
Yeah.
But it is actually connected to The Office, because obviously it's about a newspaper. What's a newspaper made of? Literally paper. The Office was set around a paper company, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, Ned Sampson, who Donald Gleeson is playing, he's the head of this paper, and he's looking to return it to its former glory. He doesn't have any money to pay reporters, so he ends up recruiting these volunteers from this kind of skeleton staff that they already have. And in order to kind of make this a success, he invites this documentary crew to kind of follow the process of them doing this in these hard and trying times. With Oscar Nunez is back. He's reprising his role as Oscar Martinez. I'm not sure what his role is in terms of the team, but again, I'm sure that's how they're actually connected. I don't know. I'll try anything once, guys. You know what I mean? I really want this to go well. But again, it's the struggle of, the first one was so successful and you have all the character archetypes of, you know, like, it stars loads of other people. Sabrina Impacciatore, who people will know from The White Lotus, Chelsea Frey and Melvin Gregg. All of those characters are all going to be like siphoned into their character archetype and compared to the ones from The Office. It's going to be like, who's the Kelly? Who's everyone else? Like, it's going to be hard. But as I said, I'll try anything once.
I don't know about the context of it, because I can see, like, in the original Office, you know, they sold paper, which is almost like, at the time, an inconsequential thing. Like, how could you make a big deal over selling paper? And that was part where the comedy came from. But this sounds kind of tragic that this is a newspaper trying to keep its head above water in an era when a lot of newspapers are failing to do that.
Yeah, like, you can't imagine it's going, like, paper, everyone always needs paper. A newspaper is like, it's a bit more, it's a harder sell.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
But it's just, it can't be too close to the original in terms of what's the other part. Like, it's that now that we're talking it out and teasing it out, and like, maybe they should have never done this. They probably should have never done this. But
the idea kind of sounds like, you know, Afterlife with Ricky Gervais. It's reminded me of when they have the newspaper.
Oh yeah, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, of course.
And their reporters aren't the best, and they go out and get little stories and stuff.
Yeah.
That's just what it reminds
God, yeah,
me
I
of.
Didn't actually cop that parallel.
And
well.
Isn't,
and Ricky Gervais,
isn't
the
new version of The Devil Wears Prada about on a similar
the dying well. Print media. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
okay,
absolutely.
So, oh God. So they're third in with that idea.
Yeah. What a positive few years in
positive
months
few years. But you see, don't, has Donald Gleason appeared in he has in American
TV?
Yeah, in American TV.
He was in, there's a show that I never saw, but I feel like people have been referencing a lot recently. Is it The Secret Patient? Is it The Patient?
Patient,
The Patient. And
he was nominated for Golden Globe for that.
Was he?
I think so.
But I feel like that came and did not, sorry, no offense to anyone, I feel like that came and went here. No, or did,
I don't know if it actually came out here.
Yeah, maybe it didn't. Maybe that's why it would have come in and went here. Yeah. That's the maybe one of the last TV things he did. Again, I'm open to correction on that. But, and I haven't really, what comedy bits has he done? He did the show with his brother.
He's lovely.
He is lovely. I'm just.
I know he'd be well able to do the comedy. I would. Yeah. I would think it's just curiously in the States he seems only known because he was in a Star Wars movie, whereas here he's been in so many things.
Yeah. Yeah. Then there's also it's like he's the Steve Carell character, and like the whole thing with Steve Carell character was that he was an idiot, and then it's like, can you do idiot again? I don't know. Maybe that's not the track they're going to go down. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll wait and see.
Or, yeah, well, you could see a character maybe being wildly optimistic but failing.
Like an Amy Poehler, Parks and Recreations, Leslie Nope. I could buy into that a little bit more.
Yeah. And, you know, what's it's great to know that the innovation, though, people haven't forgotten about innovation. There's going to be a new Clueless TV series. Yay! How do they keep coming up with these ideas?
Oh, God. Yeah, Alicia Silverstone has been talking about it this week, was asked about it, and she said, what can you tell us? And she said, not much, which is deeply helpful, but said she is really excited about it. What I thought was interesting, though, was, so there was a sequel series or a reboot series. I think they were working on it with Peacock or something. I think they'd announced it in, either they announced it in 2020 and they shelved it, or else it was shelved in 2020, but it was around, it was supposed to be around Dion. It was supposed to be following Dion, played by Stacey Dash in the original film. Like her stepping into Cher's shoes and wardrobe and becoming like the queen bee or whatever. But they've shelved that and now it seems to be like Cher focused again. So I'm wondering what happened there. And I was trying to kind of do my Googles and my research to see if Stacey Dash is involved in the series. I can't find anything. So I'm wondering, I'm widely speculating here, but it just goes back to that thing of like, how many years are we after Clueless? Who is this for? But then I'm also, the argument for it is it kind of interesting to see Cher in kind of midlife, approaching things differently, but then you're not in the high school setting.
I don't know. She learned how to say Haitians now.
Yeah. I don't know.
But Cher's not going to be actually in it, is she?
Alicia Silverstone plays Cher Horowitz.
Yeah, all right. Yes, I see what you mean. Yes.
Sorry. No, Cher was in it.
Yeah, that would be something.
I would like to see that. Yeah. I would like to see that.
Oh, God, it's sad, isn't it? I wonder if they have a cupboard where they just have all the old TV shows.
It's just a bucket and they go, they close their eyes and then they go, yes, okay.
It's a lucky
another Game of Thrones. Yeah, brilliant.
There you go. Perfect. So, Linda, I suppose you wish your name was Lynn right now. But,
yeah, call me Lynn, winner of the...
Tell us about our second wine today.
The second wine, would you believe, Babich is the name of the wine from New Zealand, but it's the first New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc that I ever had in my whole life, ever, when I was only about like 18 or 19, so 20 odd years ago. And it's still an amazing brand and they are just incredible. So it's one of the oldest wineries in New Zealand, in Marlborough, established in, 1916? And it is third generation winemaker. Croatian immigrants moved over. And,
hence the name, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not your typical kind of Kiwi name. Mm. But they're certified organic and sustainable. And they're just really, really, I love every wine that they make. They're rosé, they're basic Sauvignon. This is the black label one. So it's more premium. And it's just the Pinot Noir. It's just so velvety. It's so difficult to grow Pinot Noir grape. It's a diva. She has like a kind of thin skin and gets sunburned and, you know, it's quite fussy. But when you get it right in the right cooler climate, it can just be magic. So it's a little bit hotter than you get in Burgundy in Marlborough, but it's just so tasty. I adore this wine. It's got raspberry, cherry, real savoury note as well, like herbaceous and all that. And I just love it. So think charcuterie board, even a duck breast with like cherry sauce and things like that. I love this with Chinese food. I just adore this one. So silky and velvety, the tannins. And it is available in good independents for Pinto Wines, McHugh's, Sweeney's, The Corkscrew, Black Rock Cellars and other good ones. So yeah, check it out.
Do you remember in, was it Pinot Noir and Sideways that yeah. a man hated?
Did
that
no, actually... he hated Merlot.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
No effing Merlot, but yeah. he loved Pinot. Pinot okay, was the right. king okay. because it's so difficult to make. Oh. And it can taste like right watery if you get a bad vintage, and it can be really expensive in Burgundy. So New Zealand, like this, you know, like it's not a cheap grape to grow. But it can be just spectacular.
Yeah. yeah. And why is it difficult? Is it?
It's thin skinned grape. So when it gets too much sun, it actually burns and then you don't get nice flavours from it. And then if it rains too much, the rain can burst it. So, you know, you get the crops are destroyed. So it's a real fickle grape. So you have to kind of love and be really careful with it. So it needs cooler climates. But enough sunshine to ripen properly as well, or else it gets a kind of green like note that you don't want in it, unripe. So it's delicate and it's a bit of a diva, but when you get it right, it can be magic.
How do they protect it from the sun? Do they put little hats on all the grapes?
They have canopies over them, like, yeah. you know, that it isn't, and they'd use the different aspects and have them particular exposures to the sun that it wouldn't be right on top of them. You know, so they yeah. plant them in the particular way so that it is just getting enough sunshine.
Yeah.
It's real like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Everything has to be just right.
Yeah. yeah. Okay, yeah. No, so, it's very nice.
Do you like that, everyone? Yeah,
very nice indeed. Yeah. Okay, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Stans. Here's a clip.
Hi, my name is Chicka Chicka. I wanted to say Zod Shady. Hi, my name is Chicka 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 Zod Shady.
Hi, my name is Alex.
Hi, my name is Daniela.
Hi, my name is Giovanni.
Hi, my name is Brooklyn.
Hi, my name is James.
Hi, my name is Kyle.
Hi, my name is...
Well, no, you're...
I thought you needed, like, the song. Hi, my name is Nikki.
Right. None of those were the real Eminem, by the way, just in case you're wondering. So, it kind of, what's the... If you like, the starting point of this documentary.
So the starting point, they do kind of introduce everybody, just as you heard. That is pretty much how the documentary starts. And they are kind of talking about why they love Eminem and what their first introduction to him was. And then he kind of gets brought in to discuss how he like started out, and he was coming up through these kind of like rap battles in Detroit. And he was known for just being so quick and so sharp-witted that he was winning a lot, and then when he wasn't winning, he was getting really annoyed. But that's how he got spotted and how he got started in the industry, is because someone saw him at a rap battle, which I thought was actually pretty cool. And, you know, when you're watching back, like I was like growing up when Eminem was at probably his peak and when he first started out, and you kind of forget just what a cultural impact it was. And something that they say in the film is that he made the white t-shirt cool. And you're like, actually, yeah, when you think about it, if you see anybody like dressing up on Halloween who have like spray painted their hair like platinum blonde and they're wearing a white t-shirt and some blue jeans, you're like, oh, you're gone as Eminem. Like everyone will know it. Even to this day, you'd know who they're gone as. It was that kind of like a big moment. And even like in the peak of TRL, back on MTV with Parson Daily, like whenever he was on, like apparently like it was one of the biggest crowds that they'd ever have, like outside the studio, was always for Eminem. And you know, we may not have realized at the time, but like he just was an absolutely massive megastar. And one of his biggest hits was the film, or not the film, well actually it was kind of like a little movie, wasn't it, the music video, Stan. And he wrote it when he was sort of thinking about, you know, how some fans can be so like overly obsessive and things like that. And he then heard a clip of Dido's song Thank You, and he decided to incorporate that into it and then used her in the music video with Devon Siwa, who was also Casper in the first Casper film with Christina Ricci. He was also in Final Destination. So it became like this massive thing. And even people who were like the super fans of Eminem were hearing the song and kind of going, oh gosh, okay, yeah, maybe I can relate to that a little bit too much.
But wasn't it based on a real letter from somebody actually called Stan? Or did
that was actually made up. So he explains actually where the idea came from in the documentary, which I was like, okay, so that kind of that gets rid of that rumor for sure. And you know, like again, didn't realize the impact that the song had in terms of, you know, language. So in 2017, a stan was added to the dictionary.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it was sort of seen as like your list, like overly obsessed fan. So it was kind of seen as like a derogatory term. But then over the years, you know, it has kind of changed where you're kind of like, oh, if you just you are a stan, you were just a supporter kind of thing. So yeah. it has kind of changed over the years. But in the some like we heard there in the clip, like some of the real people and some of the fans who are featured in the documentary, but there's also some celebrity stans that are featured as well. So Ed Sheeran shows up and he's talking about how he dressed up as Eminem for a talent show, I think I want to say, in school one year, and he was there up on stage performing as Eminem. And when you kind of hear some of the way that he does his lyrics, you're kind of like, oh, I can kind of see like where the Eminem inspiration kind of comes from. So that I thought was really interesting. Adam Sandler is there as well, and he was remembering the VMA's performance when Slim Shady comes out with all the Slim Shadys and march up onto the stage. And he was like, who is this guy? Oh my God, like he's going to be a phenomenon. And then, of course, he cast him in Happy Gilmore too, and he was talking about how like hilarious he was in that and things like that. So it's kind of nice to see that it's not just, you know, like non-celebrities who are super fans. There was also quite a few like celebrities who were like, oh no, like I remember, like I was a mad fan. One of the women actually in it, she has the record for the most Eminem tattoos. And she then married someone who was also a massive Eminem fan, and they got married in Detroit because that's where Eminem is from.
Yeah.
Like this is the level that we're talking about. And it's like, I think...
How old would these fans be?
So some of them would have only been like late, like 8, 9, 10 or early teens kind of thing when Eminem was really coming up in the industry. So when you're thinking about it, you're like, you're probably like way too young to have been like listening to his music. But that's kind of the way that the culture was, that they were like, no, like I want this. I want to listen to this song. And, you know, mothers were always kind of like bashing him for like the language used in his music. And he was always just like, well, don't let your children listen to my music then. Like, you know, there are ways to prevent these things. But then the movie 8 Mile came out and all of the mothers kind of went from bashing him to wanting to mother him kind of thing, because they saw him in a completely different light as a result. So there was also like that shift that happened as well.
Yeah.
But one thing that I thought was the most interesting is that, you know, we always hear about like the Take That mania, the Boyzone mania, the Beatles mania. With Eminem mania, it wasn't just a case of they were just massive fans and like wanted to meet him or things like that. They actually wanted to become him. Like they wanted to embody everything that he stood for. They wanted to look like him, act like him, talk like him, everything. They wanted to just embody who he was as a person, not just as this megastar.
Why?
And it's, yeah. And so there's one guy, he's from France, and he still to this day is like obsessed with Eminem. And he was the one who's like, oh yeah, I'm the chicka 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 Slim Shady. And he is mental, like bless his socks. He is a little bit on the wacky side of things. He even knows Eminem's car, so whenever he does go to Detroit, he can spot him like a mile away. He's just like, oh, there he is, he's at the studio today and things like that. And you're like, well, that is kind of like borderline stalkery. Like maybe he is the stan that the song was made about. But yeah, it is a case of like people just wanted to, it's a different kind of fandom as opposed to the Beatlemania sort of side of things.
Well, no, and so is there something in their own lives that these people shared where they said, this is why I relate to this so heavily?
Yeah, so a lot of people do kind of explain what it was about Eminem that they gravitated towards. And it's kind of interesting to see even how Eminem's style has changed over the years. So like when he got sober, and he talks about actually how he overdosed, and like what made him kind of sober up was realizing all of the things that he was missing out on, especially with his daughter. He missed like her first recital because he was in recovery from the overdose, and he was kind of like, well, if I keep sort of doing this, I'm going to end up missing even more of these moments, so I'm going to get clean. And then he had this kind of way of doing things where he's like, oh, I want to feel like I'm embracing this new side of myself, but people aren't connecting with it. So maybe I just need to actually like stop pretending to embrace it and really embrace it, and people will be able to connect to it. So people who've been listening to him then started seeing a lot of what he was saying in themselves. So people got sober because he got sober, and he had that kind of effect on people. So it's actually, it's crazy to think just what impact he still has to this day, especially with these diehard fans.
Yeah. Okay. Right, finally, the new Eminem movie will star Matt Smith. There would be some interesting casting. No, he's going to be in a Star Wars film.
Yeah, I live in
Do
more
we live
this.
In an era now where sooner or later everybody's going to be in a Star Wars film?
Yeah, but you know what? I just find this interesting about Matt Smith that he just loves like a nerdy fandom. Like he's been Doctor Who. He's currently in Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon. He said, you know what, we're going to add Star Wars to the roster. He's going to be a baddie in the new Star Wars flick, which I didn't realise is being led by Ryan Gosling. I feel like I haven't heard a lot about this.
What?
So Ryan Gosling is in the lead. It's from Sean Levy, who did Deadpool and Wolverine. As I said, I'm very new to the Star Wars fandom, so I don't know which galaxy far, far away this is in or what this follows. Matt Smith is going to be a baddie. Olivia will
isn't
give
it all the same one? Just different parts of it.
Different parts of it. Whatever.
So this one is going to be set 5 years after the events of Rise of the Skywalker.
Yes.
Yeah. And what was interesting with the Matt Smith
rumour... Oh, that makes it clear then, yes.
Well, what makes it interesting with Matt Smith is that he was actually rumoured to have been cast as a young Palpatine in the Rise of Skywalker and then got cut out.
I'm remembering this now.
It's never been officially confirmed one way or the other. So the fact that he's now been cast in this, you're kind of just like, is this a kind of like, sorry, we cut you. Here's a bigger role in this one.
He's not the main baddie. I think it's Mia Goth. So now people are wondering who he's actually going to be. But I should say it's called Star Wars Starfighter. It's due to start shooting in England later this year. And it's slated to be released May 2027. But like that could all change, as we all know, with movie releases.
Yeah. Interesting one. Thank you all very much, as ever. Fionnuala Jones, Zinda Coogan and Olivia Fahey.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.